Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
It's a happy day. My heart feels like an alligator.
Howie Carr, Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
The public will be truly amazed by that.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
Live from the Byrna Less Lethal Pistol Studio.
It is a special pleasure for me to introduce
Howie Carr.
Welcome to the Howie Carr Show, 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. And the hearing for an emergency motion to stop the deposition of corrupt, disgraced ex-Massachusetts State Police officer Michael Proctor is about to get underway again. It was continued today. The judge Gil Day gave Proctor's attorney more time to come up with some documents proving that he really is having a personal emergency of whatever kind. And he said the documents they'd already filed were insufficient. It was like a note from his mom saying he wasn't feeling good. But anyway, it's depositions are an interesting thing, and it's hard to get out of a deposition, or I've never even tried to get out of a deposition myself, because I knew it would be frowned upon not only by my own attorneys but by the judge more than somewhat. So I wanted to talk to somebody about a lawyer about the depositions and how you get out of them and how often this occurs. And so we're joined by Joe Roach. He's a divorce lawyer. Mainly he handles the family practice for Eden Rafferty. And he's been on the show before, and he's pretty good at, I think he has a pretty good understanding of depositions. Joe, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Oh, hi, Howie. It's always nice to be here.
Well, listen, tell people what a deposition is, if they don't know, briefly, before we get into the circumstances here. What is a deposition?
I mean, a deposition is an opportunity to process in discovery that allows you to put somebody under oath and take their testimony before court. Instead of most people think of themselves as witnesses in a case, they're testifying in front of a judge or a jury. A deposition is just an opportunity that you can put somebody under oath and take their testimony, in my office as part of the discovery process. So it gives you kind of an early look at what somebody might say if you put them on the stand during a trial.
Right. And as you're being questioned, there's no judge. You can't object to anything.
Yeah, normally there is some objections can be made, but most of the time when you're doing a deposition, the only real objection is to the form of the question. Everything else is reserved for the time of trial.
Well, so Proctor got the word. Michael Proctor, you know who he is, the crooked, corrupt state cop. He got the word in April that he was going to have to give this deposition, even though he's not a party to the case. He's a witness, and so he waits. So there's no problem until Karen Reed's attorneys drop all these bombs with these texts, which he had to know was coming because they came right off his phone. And then the day after this thing drops and it's the lead story in all the papers and on TV and everybody's talking about it and is appalled, his lawyer at 2:10 p.m. on Friday afternoon says, "Oh, my client is not going to be able to make it to the deposition. More than 15 lawyers are going to go to Boston this morning, including Alan Jackson coming in from L.A. to be in attendance and ask these questions after he's been disgraced." And then he says, "I don't want to do it anymore." How often does this happen, Joe Roach?
I mean, I would say the manner in which this Proctor thing happened is uncommon. It's not uncommon that depositions get rescheduled. A lot of times, you'll schedule a deposition before you have the opportunity to check everybody's calendar or make sure that everybody's available. So lawyers do reschedule depositions pretty often. But, you know, Friday afternoon before people are flying in from California to do a deposition on a Monday morning, that I find to be somewhat convenient. I don't think that that happens very often. And I will be interested to see how the this goes for them this afternoon. I know this morning I don't think it went particularly well. You know, I find it somewhat curious the way that his lawyers have handled this today.
But on the other hand, if they produce some document saying he's having some kind of mental health problems or family emergency, I mean, the judge is not going to turn him down, is he? I mean, however suspicious he might be, and we certainly all are, outside of the courtroom, right? But is the judge going to turn him down?
I mean, I think probably not. I mean, he's already kind of wasted the day, right? I mean, he's supposed to be deposed today, and, you know, he didn't get deposed today. I'm not sure that he's going to get a significant delay other than, you know, I could see what you're saying, Howie. I could see a circumstance where, you know, all of those text messages get released on Thursday evening or Friday morning, and that causes him to have some sort of, you know, mental health
crisis. A crisis.
Right.
That's a good word.
So he had to go away for a long weekend to refresh and recover.
Right.
I don't think he's going to get out of this. I think that
Mike Vrabel had to go away for a weekend, but then he was back on Monday.
Yeah, he missed day three of the draft. you gotta feel some punishment, you know.
Yeah. And he went and he talked to the press even. 508 says, is perjury in a deposition the same thing as perjury in court?
You are taking testimony under oath. You are sworn in at the beginning of a deposition. So you are absolutely swearing to tell the truth when you are deposed.
Like Clinton, when he was president, you know, he committed perjury, right? When he said, I did not have sex with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky, and he was disbarred.
I guess that depends on what your definition of the word is, Howie.
You're absolutely correct. And then they said no one ever goes to prison for lying in a deposition. But then it turned out 117 people were in prison at the time for lying during depositions. So it can be. But could he take the Fifth Amendment if they said, Mr. Proctor, you said you planted coke in those text messages. You said you planted cocaine on defendants. Is that a true statement?
He would have to be advised by his counsel that he has the right to take a Fifth Amendment, on some of those things. I think absolutely.
So you can, but he would have his lawyer, the Abe Lincoln lookalike there, without the stovepipe hat, Hamill. He would have Hamill in there in the room on State Street with him when he's testifying.
Sure. I mean, I think that's what their part of their argument for delaying today was that, you know, the lawyers, I think he's got a team of lawyers who were unable to properly prepare for the deposition today, which, I mean, I've been involved in defending depositions before. And I gotta be honest with you, it doesn't take a ton of time to prepare for that because for the most part, you're just sitting there listening to everything and once in a while objecting to the manner in which the other lawyer is talking to your client.
And he's a witness. So really, I mean, what kind of jeopardy is he in if he tells the truth?
Well, according to his lawyers, too, how he's a minor witness. He's almost completely irrelevant to this case. So I'm not sure that they did him any favors with that, with their motion that they filed on Friday, because they sort of played up how irrelevant he was to the proceedings and then tried to make it seem like multiple lawyers needed many days to prepare him for his
right.
Completely irrelevant testimony.
And it kept the story alive, you know, for the whole weekend.
Yeah, I will say, and this is where I just sort of, you know, the part of me that really appreciates Alan Jackson, I would say that the release, filing that complaint the day before this deposition, the day before the Friday deadline was somewhat funny. I mean, truly a work of PR art, you know.
The judge didn't seem to like it very much, though. Judge Gilday, he said, you know, you didn't have to do it under the rules, but wouldn't it have been? I guess he used some phrase like common courtesy to inform them that you were going to file this.
I think he did mention that it felt premeditated when they were scheduled to appear on the Today Show already.
Well, what if you had a client who said, "Oh, I'm going to get I'm really going to get some bad ink. I'm going to cancel this thing and claim I'm sick." What would you say to him, Joe Roach?
In this circumstance, I'm not sure that this was the better play. It feels a little bit like if Proctor had been deposed today, none of this becomes as big of a story as it became. So I think that probably my advice would have been, why don't we just sit for this and get through it? And if we have to file a motion to quash this or some sort of protective order in the midst of a deposition, if they start going off script and asking you about text messages and this complaint, then perhaps we can stop it midstream. But I think that the way they did handle it made it into a bit of a media circus for the whole weekend.
Yeah. When I heard that Damon Ellickson say this to me on Friday, I knew, wow, I got to tweet this out immediately. This is a good story. We're talking to Joe Roach. He's the lawyer from Eden Rafferty. Where can people reach you, Joe, if they need your services?
Oh, anybody can call me at the office. It's 508-795-1601.
And what's your email address?
My email is the letter J, Roach, it's R-O-C-H-E, at EdenRafferty.com.
Yeah, and have you ever had any clients just totally lose it when they had to go for a deposition?
You know, I haven't, but that's not to say it doesn't happen. I mean, in what I do primarily, you know, Howie, I'm dealing with, you know, jilted ex-spouses or boyfriends or, you know, alleged boyfriends or girlfriends. And, you know, there are certainly times where people would prefer not to be deposed about their private business.
Right.
But at the end of the day, my advice for all of those people is, well, listen, we're going to sit there and we're going to answer these questions and we're going to get through this thing, because the longer we put it off, the worse it becomes. That, you know, every day that goes by is an opportunity to learn something new, Howie.
Yeah. Do you think that after you read the texts that were in the complaint, do you think that all of these cases that he's been involved in are going to be reviewed? I mean, I would think so, wouldn't you?
I know for a fact. I mean, I'm sure you do too. That I've heard that there are a number of defense lawyers who are absolutely moving to open these things back up because of what they've seen in those text messages. And I think, you know, I think the Commonwealth will probably try to hold that back as long as they can, but some of those text messages are very damaging. I think some of these defense lawyers who are very, very good lawyers are going to have a field day with some of these things.
Yeah. I mean, as bad as the racist, misogynist stuff is, planting evidence. I mean,
planting evidence that, are very problematic.
You can plant evidence on anybody, you know, whatever color, race, creed, sexual preference, you know. I mean, every case he's ever been involved in now comes into question, doesn't it?
I mean, I think some of those text messages that I read would certainly call into question every single person he's ever pulled over and whether or not those are legitimate stops, because I think he says some things in those text messages that would call that into question.
Yeah, and he sees good-looking women, and he runs their records. Cops get fired for doing that kind of thing. You know,
yeah, it's. I mean, if anybody's listening to this, like, don't put things in text. It's just not that hard. Just don't do it. These should not be text messages that are being sent out by anyone, let alone a police officer in the midst of investigation.
Write it, regret it, right? Isn't that what they say?
That's it. That's it. Say things in person. Just don't put it in writing.
Yeah. Say it, forget it. That's the thing.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. So you recommend if someone gets a subpoena to get deposed, they should do it as soon as possible, because it's just going to get worse as time drags on. Is that your legal advice?
Yeah, listen, once you do the deposition and you close the deposition, then it's over, right?
And yeah.
The longer you hold out, the more information becomes available, the worse it's going to get.
And the more they're thinking he must have something to hide if he wants to postpone this. So they're going to look harder for more damaging information. Joe Roach, give us your number one more time and where people can reach you. Joe Roach is a great lawyer. He's handled tons of divorces, especially, but all kinds of cases. Joe, what's your phone number?
Absolutely. Our phone number at Eden Rafferty is 508-795-1601.
And your email address?
My email is jroach, R-O-C-H-E, at edenrafferty.com.
Okay. The hearing will soon be getting underway. And again, I'm going to go online and say he's going to be allowed to take a few days, if not weeks off. Is that your prediction as well, Joe?
Yeah, I think he's going to get a few mental health days, but I do think he will be asked to submit to the deposition. It just won't be today or tomorrow.
All right. Are civil depositions sealed? When do they become public? That's one final question.
You know what? I don't know. I can't give you the answer. I would only be guessing at that one, Howie. But when this one becomes available, I think it'll be very popular to some people.
So sometimes I've gotten civil depositions and I've had to make inquiries as to whether it's public record or not. And so it seems like it's kind of a murky area.
I think it is a little of a black area. I know the Alex Jones depositions were made public because I remember seeing those. But yeah, I would. No one's ever interested in the depositions that I take. I got to be honest with you, Alex. You know, who picks the kids up from school and when? It's not something that the public has a lot of interest in.
All right, Joe Roach, thanks for being with us for Meaden Rafferty. His number is 508-795-1601. I'm Howie Carr.
Watch the show live.
Dispatch Rumble
at rumble.com/ The Howie Carr Show.
Rumble activate.
Howie Carr is back.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. I know how good Perfect Smiles is because I've been going there forever, and my teeth look better than ever. I only go to Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. It is so worth the trip from anywhere in New England to tax-free New Hampshire. Visit them today at perfectsmiles.com or call them at 603-595-6699, 603-595-6699. Jared, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarrShow.com, is are the Democrats cheating in California? Yes, no, or we'll never know.
Yes.
97% of the audience
says yes. It's 97? It's down to 97%?
2% say we'll never know, and 1% say no.
We finally got a few votes. It takes more than one vote to get to 1%, but we got a few votes in there now. 844-500-4242. 781 says, I stood out at the courthouse in support of Karen. There was a black mother holding a sign saying her son is rotting in jail and was framed by Norfolk County too. I listened to her story and believe she was telling the truth. I think of them quite often and feel so bad. Yeah, I got to play some cuts from this guy, this Meatball Morrissey's minion, the current DA. He worked for him or his predecessor for, I think, 18 years. He's proud. He's in the debate in Canton last week, and he said he's proud of the DA's office. You got to hear these cuts. They're in they're all in Needham tonight at the Common for another candidate's night. 844-500-4242. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Byrna Less Lethal Pistol Studio, it's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242. We're going to play these Greg Connor cuts about defending. He's defending the way Meatball Morrissey ran the office. I guess he's defending his $183,000 salary, slurping at the trough all those years. It only cost him $2,500 in campaign contributions to Morrissey over the years. And before Morrissey, he was contributing to Bill Keating, who had the job. It's a Norfolk County tradition. You want to be in the DA's office, you give the DA some money. It's not against the law. It's what they used to call legal graft. 844-500-4242. 844-500-4242. I want to read this story about Scott Pelley. You know, everybody has their own memories of really bad stories with 60 Minutes. You know, like obviously the Texas Air National Guard story where they tried to throw the election to John Kerry in 2004 with a phony made up story by the Democrats. And, I saw what they did with Kevin Weeks. They wouldn't promote my book. They only promoted his book. And I was just to be the victim, you know, in the thing. It worked out for me, but they wouldn't even show my book. They cut the sleazy editor had cut a deal with the sleazy bosses of 60 Minutes. Judith Regan, remember her? She was fired for buying the book from OJ for $1 million. And then there was Joe Yandel, the guy who claimed he was a mega Vietnam vet. And, you know, that's how he got into trouble. And he ended up killing this liquor store owner. And it turned out he'd never been in Vietnam, never been anywhere near Vietnam. He claimed he had a Purple Heart and PTSD and all this crap. He was just a drug addict from Charlestown. And the 60 Minutes, their defense was, well, Mike Barnicle and Kevin Cullen told us he was a Vietnam vet. Oh, okay. They're really reputable journalists for the Boston Globe. What were the circumstances of their leaving employment of the Boston Globe? In Kevin Cullen's case, they allowed him to come back with his tail tucked between his legs after he lied about being at the Boston Marathon bombing.
So, Howie, we do have an update on Proctor.
Yes.
We won't be able to have any audio until after everything's done. But this is from Christina Rex and Mike Crawford. Judge Gilday denies Proctor's motion to delay his deposition.
I was wrong. I'm so happy I was wrong.
He wanted Proctor's attorneys to present him for a deposition tomorrow. However, that does not work for Karen Reed's attorneys, so they're going to reschedule or figure out a schedule ASAP. But yes, the motion to delay was denied.
All right. Let's hear it for Judge Gilday. Oh, that's great news. I mean, I'm sure they brought here's a document from his doctor. He's been getting treatment for a long time. That's the sound of ink drying, trying to blow the ink dry off the, yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. So now, Judge, please unseal the documents that they turned over to you. 844-500-4242. See if we can get Damon on to talk about this, though. See if we can get him on. Anyway, I mentioned that, you know, there are all kinds of these stories that they screwed up. And you think about, you remember one, but, you know, most of the others have just gone by, you've forgotten about. So there's a guy named Jonathan Leaf wrote something for the Free Beacon. And apparently he was brought in as a collaborator on a piece of documentary theater. The project was inspired by the true story of Stephen Donziger and his legal fight with the oil giant Chevron. This is from the Free Beacon. 7 years earlier, Scott Pelley had presented a laudatory profile of Donziger on 60 Minutes. In Pelley's accountant, Donziger was a brave and capable attorney who had exposed Chevron for the horrible damage it had done to the virgin tropical forest of Ecuador and the indigenous people living there. Donziger won an $18 billion judgment. $18 billion judgment. But it turned out that Donziger had been engaged in blackmail, pandering, fraud, conspiracy, and bribery. Moreover, it was shown that Chevron had reached prior agreements with the Ecuadorian government, which absolved it of any responsibility for a future cleanup from the oil spills that were the subject of Donziger's litigation. In fact, the real story was that Chevron had tried to prevent the Ecuadorians from building a pipeline that caused most of the damages to their forests. And the government had then robbed the company of most of its investment in the country. In short, everything about Donziger's story as told by 60 Minutes was false. The faceless corporation had tried to behave honorably and had been abused. Donziger, so lauded by Scott Pelley, was a crook, a liar, and a fraud. Pelley's reporting was botched for reasons that went beyond his obvious gullibility. Anyone, of course, could be fooled by a skillful con man, but Pelley took things to a new level of deception. In order to make Chevron look bad, again, this is a column in the Free Beacon by Jonathan Leaf. Pelley's 60 Minutes crew showed only the scarred oil pits that Chevron had no control over and not the ones it did. I'm getting the PTSD from my few appearances on 60 Minutes. The latter were sites it had worked diligently to repair. Donziger's deceptions were all eventually proven in federal court. For this reason, a federal judge arranged for his disbarment, and Donziger, this is again the guy that Scott Pelley claimed was a great hero. Donziger spent almost 3 years under house arrest, in jail or in federal prison. Among the charges he was found guilty of were racketeering. Racketeering. Now ask yourself this. If you had presented a broadcast lauding Bernie Madoff as a skilled and reputable hedge fund manager or Ted Bundy as a commendable young pre-law student, wouldn't you want to make some admission of error? Isn't that what a serious journalist does? Well, it's not what Pelley did. 60 Minutes still has its 2009 Donziger profile up on CBS News' and CBS TV's YouTube channels with no updates or corrections. It has published no updates about his disbarment and criminal convictions. And then this guy, Jonathan Leaf, says, Pelley is a classic talking head, someone who started in television and whose whole career has been forged within it. This is the world that the movie Broadcast News depicts. Someone handsome and deep-voiced appears on camera. Others do most of the writing and or all of the writing and research. Interestingly, the producer of that 2009 Chevron piece, Dragan Mihailovic, was among the top 60 Minutes producers fired late last month by CBS News management, enraging Pelley. In Britain, news anchors have traditionally been called newsreaders. That's because this is what they are. Their job is to make sure that their hair is coiffed when they read from the teleprompter. Pelley was a male bimbo, a himbo. Over the years, he has made many absurd and bombastic statements. For example, in 2006, he presented a completely uncritical two-part report on climate change. When critics asked him why he didn't speak to anyone who questioned the preposterous assertions of those who said climate change was an existential threat to humanity, he responded by saying that this idea was akin to Holocaust denial. In his final line of his story, and it's great, Jonathan Leaf, who's to say, talking about who's more qualified, less qualified, what can be stated is a provable fact. The main reason 60 Minutes continues to be America's most watched news program is its lead-in, NFL football. And, you know, later in the year they have golf tournaments. And I think they also have March Madness, too, don't they? I mean, without mostly NFL football, but also, you know, March Madness and the Masters, certainly. The Masters is a huge ratings hit. Without those boosts, there would be no 60 Minutes. 844-500-4242. All the more reason for the NFL to go to streaming. That would be great. If it kills 60 Minutes, it would be worth having to pay $100 a year or whatever to get streaming, to get the games. I'd be glad to pay $100 a year to destroy 60 Minutes. Paul, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, I have a great slogan for Mr. Plattner. I think he's had PTSD since he was born. And what I'd like to say is, Pete Plattner, is a trustworthy sexual Ellen DeGenerate.
Deviant. How about deviant, Paul? That saves you a few syllables.
But I like to go back in time with Ellen DeGeneres.
You're giving me PTSD just thinking about Ellen DeGeneres. She was another great boss, like Scott Pelley. Thanks for the call.
They served together, right?
Did they? They
were. Ellen and Scott, they're in the same combat unit.
Were they at Omaha Beach or Utah Beach on D-Day? I was in combat. Limerick guy says, I love it that Procter took a gamble and lost. Get it? Procter and Gamble.
Ha, 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 ha.
919. That's how they all got ahead. Fake reporting. Remember Dateline and its fake gas tank explosion on the pickup truck? Yes, I do remember that now that you mention it. You know, not everybody who comes out of TV news is totally corrupt and incompetent, but there's a high percentage. There's a high percentage of Scott Pelley's. Some get as far as Scott Pelley, and some of them just, flame out at the local level. 844-500-4242. Oh, no. There's been another veteran, the Amanda Crawford era is ending at Channel 7. Who the hell is Amanda Crawford? She's there for 7 years. Amanda, I never saw you once. I never saw Matt Reed once. Never listened once to Bob Bronson or whatever his name is. 844-500-4242. Imagine a scenario where you or your loved ones face a threat. Your first instinct might be to resort to lethal force, but it's crucial to consider a safer, less lethal alternative first to avoid the legal complications associated with firearms. Introducing Byrna. Byrna's less lethal pistol launcher, this device is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition and designed to incapacitate an attacker for up to 40 minutes. Providing a critical window for you to escape or to get help while minimizing the risk of permanent harm. Here's a real-life account from a Byrna customer named Adam. While heading to his night shift, Adam encountered a road-raging driver who swerved dangerously, stopped abruptly, and aggressively approached him. Remaining calm, Adam dialed 911 and armed himself with his Byrna launcher. He aimed the laser at the aggressor's chest, which immediately de-escalated the situation. A hostile driver returned to his vehicle and awaited the police. The officers confirmed that Adam's non-lethal response was perfectly handled and judged. That night, Byrna didn't just prevent a potential tragedy, it saved two lives without causing physical harm. Byrna is legal in all 50 states, requires no background checks, and can be conveniently shipped directly to your door. Over 500,000 units sold and proudly hand-assembled in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Visit Byrna.com/Howie now for an exclusive 10% discount. That's BYRNA.com/Howie, BYRNA.com/Howie. I'm Howie Carr.
Howie Carr will return. Howie Carr is back.
Take care of your Father's Day gift giving with my Father's Day book and t-shirt deal. Get Dad a signed copy of Paperboy or Mass Corruption or both and a free mystery t-shirt. T-shirts might be proud to be deplorable, buy American, support America, proud to be garbage, let's go Brandon, or another great offering from the Howie Carr t-shirt line. Go to HowieCarrShow.com and click on stores while supplies last. There's a lot of other good stuff in the store that you can buy for Father's Day or any other time. Mike, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Howie. You know, before Elon took off and he had the Dodge boys doing some election analysis from the 2020 election, they all came up with the same concept of the percentages between Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin, where the precincts all had ended at about 96% to 98%. And after about 12:15 at night, that left maybe 6% to 4% of the population that was still voting. And yet when Trump woke up that morning, he had lost all four swing states.
Right.
It's impossible. They said within one or a half a percent that there's no way he could have lost unless these were manipulated.
Well, did you see one of those ballot dumps in L.A.? The two radical leftists got 100% of the votes, and Spencer Pratt got zero write-in votes out of like thousands, tens of thousands cashed.
Howie, they've been cooking the books just like they've done it in Massachusetts. They keep cooking the books, and we don't have anybody in law enforcement that can do anything about it. That's the problem.
I understand. Well, the feds in the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI in Boston, but that's about it. That's all we've got. I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, nobody makes any arrests in Massachusetts. And, you know, you have Mara Healey saying, I don't know who these residents are that are being picked up. I read pictures of them. You want to see some pictures? Go to HowieCarsShow.com and look at my column for Sunday. I listed some of the residents. And not only do we have the rap sheets on all these people, we also have photographs from ICE, which they're posting them on ERO Boston, the X account. You can see them all. We could make this a Sunday feature in the Herald, actually. You know, meet the residents. Just a couple, three pictures every weekend.
All right. So, update from Christina Rex. Lawyers agree on June 25th and July 14th.
June 25th?
Yeah. She says Reed's team wants it happening today. Court arguments ensue to make it happen. Judge rules it has to happen tomorrow. Reed's lawyers say they have a scheduling conflict tomorrow. So now it is 6:25.
Boy, well, this is what they wanted. You know, they just it was a Hail Mary pass, but they wanted to stop it for a while. You know, Proctor's hoping maybe a comet hits the earth and, you know, he doesn't have to give the deposition. It's too bad. So June 25th and July 14th, because one of them, I don't know if it was Alan Jackson or Damon said it starts on Monday. Meaning it's probably going to go more than one day, and it obviously is. 844-500-4242-508. Where are all these unknown local news personalities going? The market must suck the same throughout the rest of the country. It does. I would assume they're all done, you know? That's the way it is. 508, Mr. Irrelevant was long known as the last player selected in the NFL draft. It can now be used to name every local and almost all national news anchors. Yeah, nobody knows any of these people anymore. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people like Scott Pelley, he should have just been happy to cash the check for a couple of more years before 60 Minutes goes the way of the CBS Radio News Network, which went out of business about two or three weeks ago. I'm Howie Carr.